Can anyone douse the fire of truth? Hello, my name is Will, and this is Exploding Helicopter, the podcast which carries out its carefully plotted revenge while dressed as a woman. Now, on this show, we are continuing our adventure into the world of Indian cinema. We are returning once again to the masala movie genre to look at a film where the action could most politely be described as being inspired by Die Hard. To help me review the film, I'm joined by a man who's just an orphan of a bankrupt culture who saw too many movies as a child. It's Asim Birney from the Khandan podcast. Welcome to the show, Asim.
Thank you for having me, Will. I'm so excited. I'm ready to talk about exploding helicopters.
Well, it's great to have you here, and great that you are so enthusiastic about that particular subject. And as I say, it's really good to have you with us, because anyone who's been listening to previous episodes of Exploding Helicopter will know that we've been rather stumbling around Indian cinema in some of our past episodes. So it's great to have someone with us today who actually knows what they're talking about.
Your audience is going to hear so much about Indian cinema. They're going to be done. It's like, I don't want to hear anything anymore after this.
Well, great. I mean, it's a one-stop shop for people who want to get up to speed. So, hit me with it, and give it to our audiences. So, I'm ready to roll with that. But let's perhaps just establish your credentials first. So do you want to tell people about the podcast that you do? Because I think it ties into the film that we're doing today.
Yeah, definitely. So basically, we started You Podcast around 10 years ago. So we're quite old school. And I think at that time, podcasts were kind of coming up. And I think somewhere along the line, I kind of lost the energy or the drive to it. And then 3 years ago, we just wanted to kind of reinvigorate ourselves and find like a new format. And that's where we launched Khandan Podcast. So we, our podcast, the one that we mainly do now, is called the Khandan Podcast, which has kind of like two layers in that name. The word Khandan meets family. So, our listeners are our family, but these movies that we watch, we almost feel that they become part of our family. But then the other connotation is the Khan part of it, which is, it's funny because Hindi cinema, Bollywood cinema, has been dominated basically by three actors for the last, I would say, three decades. And these are Shah Rukh Khan, who you might have seen on a few talk shows even on the BBC. Then you have Salman Khan, who's kind of a more of a macho guy. I think you guys covered him in Tiger Zinda Hai.
Yes.
So he's kind of like the brawny, muscly one. And then you have Aamir Khan, who's kind of seen as, if you look at it positively, he's seen as the intellectual one. If you see it as a negative light, he's seen as the pretentious one. So it depends on how you want to look at it. He's also the Khan that I would say he got closest to an Oscar win. His movie with actually this director, with Ashutosh Gawarikar, they collaborated after Bazi on Lagan, and that was nominated for an Oscar. They eventually lost to, I think, No Man's Land, which was a big tragedy for a lot of the South continent. We still feel Lagan was a better movie, but he got close. And he's been doing a lot of different things. And funnily enough, he has a huge following in China too. So he's kind of an interesting actor, because I mean, I love all kind of movies, but I particularly love Bollywood movies. And I think with Netflix and streaming and Amazon, a lot of people have like, oh, maybe I should give Bollywood a chance. I've been hearing about it. And my friends even come to me like, which can you recommend? Which should I watch? And a lot of times, Aamir Khan is the gateway for me. His movies have that sensibility where they're a bit closer to Western audiences, a bit more palpable to Western audiences than the other Khans can be. Whereas Salman has a very kind of, I would say, B-level, B-grade kind of movie charm. And Shah Rukh is so romantic and charming, which seems to make especially Western men uncomfortable. Something I've noticed.
Yeah, so Aamir Khan, he's, as you say, one of the sort of the sort of dominant names in Indian cinema. And he's seen as this sort of possibly the more sort of pretentious one, possibly the more sort of intellectual one. Is there sort of somebody that, you know, for people more familiar with, say, you know, American or European films, is there somebody that you would perhaps compare him to in terms of, you know, his how he's perceived in India?
It's a tough one, and I was actually thinking of what would be kind of an equivalent of, like, Shah Rukh Khan is clearly like somebody like Tom Cruise without the craziness, you know, like that's where I would put Shah Rukh. You know, Salman would be somewhere like a Stallone kind of thing, like but Stallone in his heyday. Amir is a weird one because he can do the Dustin Hoffman thing. But he can also get to the Arnold thing. So he can, like, there's been a few movies where he got so buff and muscular, insanely so. So he has that appeal where he can really tap into kind of a very commercial action movie, but he can also switch to a cerebral kind of movie making too. So it's very hard. It's like if you had like a buff Dustin Hoffman or something like that.
Well, Dustin Hoffman, I think, is a very interesting reference point because there's one Dustin Hoffman film I'm thinking of in particular of Tootsie, and I think you know, there's I think he's exercising that particular Dustin Hoffman muscle at one point in this film, but we'll get into that a little bit later. So anyway, I think we should move things along and get into the film itself. So let's listen to a bit of the trailer that's quite possibly been dubbed into Indonesian. We'll see how this goes.
सरकारी नौकर तुमने जिसको मारा है वो मेरा भाई था कानून का कोई भाई नहीं होता है बहुत फर्क पड़ता है गोविंद हमारा भाई था उसकी मौत का बदला हमारे हिसाब से होगा अगर अमरदाम जी मेरे पीछे पड़ गया ना तो मैं तुमको नहीं छोड़ूंगा.
After foiling an attempt to assassinate a government minister, police inspector Amar Danji is tasked with finding the people behind a corruption scandal. The mastermind of this evil scheme is an embittered junior minister named Chaube. Fearing that Amar is getting too close to exposing him, Chaube frames the bothersome cop for the murder of the police commissioner's daughter. Amar escapes from jail and hatches a scheme to infiltrate the criminal gang while disguised as a woman. As Amar closes in, he learns that Chaube is the man behind the conspiracy and, what's more, recognizes him as the man who killed his parents. An increasingly desperate Chaube tries to assassinate the government bigwig once again, and the action now moves to a tower block which has been taken over by Chaube's henchmen. Amar then has to fight his way through the building in order to save the day. This film came out in 1995 and was directed by, forgive me for this, Ashutosh Gorika, and stars Amir Khan, Mamtu Kulkarni and Paresh Rawal. The songs are by Anu Malik, who the internet tells me was a mega composer in India, in Indian cinema during the 1990s. It received mixed reviews from critics when it came out, with India Today calling it an ambitious collage of foreign films that just doesn't work. The film has a 6.5 rating on IMDb and an audience score of 41% on Rotten Tomatoes. So with all of that out of the way, Arsene, what do you make of Barzai?
I love Bazi, man. I think we were discussing which movie we should go for, and I said, I'm picking Bazi, but it's probably not going to be a very popular pick because not a lot of people like it, and not a lot of people will end up listening to your podcast, unfortunately. But I love this movie, and I must say, in my mind, I love this movie, but revisiting, I can definitely see a lot of the issues that were happening. And I know we're mentioning Die Hard a few things, a few times, but honestly, I think they like lifted at least 75 different movies and put it all into Bazi. Like, I could just pick different things and references from this, and even like lesser known movies like, you know, The Hard Way. Like, why would you rip off The Hard Way, right? Like, you know, the Michael J. Fox and James Wood movie?
Yeah.
It's like so random. It's so random.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely noticed some of the rather liberal use of plots and scenes from other films in this particular movie, because I think it's been said that the beginning of this film is lifted from Patriot Games with Harrison Ford, and I think the kind of the whole backstory with Amir's parents being killed, and particularly the scene where his mother goes to try and seek revenge for the death of her husband, very much reminded me of Godfather 2, where you have the flashback to young Vito Corleone, where, you know, he witnesses his mother try to do something very similar. So it seems, you know, there's all sorts of films that have been had scenes lifted from them.
I mean, this is a movie that has the audacity to say, you know Mozart, right? You know Mozart? You know his Four Ulies? I think we can do better if we add a conga beat to this, you know? This is the kind of movie this is. but yeah, it's. I mean, this movie is interesting because it's kind of a transitional movie for Aamir Khan, but also Hindi cinema as a whole. And I think this is something that you also find in Hollywood cinema, where when an actor kind of comes up, he's slotted into these lover boy romantic roles, and then he has to graduate to action movies. And, you know, he needs to become buff, right? And you could think of somebody like, you know, Ryan Gosling or even Christian Bale. They all kind of did that in a way, right? Transitioning from one kind of role to the other kind of role. And this is what Aamir Khan was trying to do. But I think this movie, the audience just didn't accept him in that kind of badass action cop role. And funnily enough, he tried this again 3 years later or 4 years later in another movie called Sarfarosh. And honestly, the styling, the way he is as a cop, it's pretty much like a photocopy. And that movie was a massive success. And Aamir Khan has this tendency. He's a bit ahead of the curve in terms of Hindi cinema. And he kind of picks up on things before the audience catches up. And I think Baazi might have been one of those things that he thought he could already transition. But you can see that with the reviews that you've seen, which I read a few reviews of this movie, and I feel they were quite unfair and quite harsh, especially about Aamir Khan. And I think that was kind of a reaction, that people just didn't want to see him yet in that macho role because they had been conditioned him to see him as this kind of lovey-dovey lover boy.
Yeah, it's interesting to sort of hear that this film was a sort of an attempt to change the perception of him as an actor, and that it didn't land. And but obviously, you know, it just was just a matter of perhaps timing that the audience was quite happy to sort of see him in a more sort of action orientated role. I mean, how do you think he sort of acquits himself in the sort of the action role? Because, you know, in terms of some of the fight scenes, he doesn't look terrible, but he doesn't wholly convince me as somebody who is a sort of a martial artist. So, I mean, has he sort of improved over the years? I mean, how did you think that he acquitted himself here? And, you know, what do you get from him in sort of subsequent films?
I mean, I gotta say, generally, like, I love action movies, right? Like, I love even like B-grade kind of like Scott Atkins kind of movies. I love those kind of movies. And I grew up on 80s actions, and I love Bollywood. But I just feel that Bollywood, in terms of action movies, it's not a genre that it excels at. Like, we don't have a Tony Jaa, we don't have a Jackie Chan, and we also don't necessarily have a Stallone that could just, you know, blow up everything. So it's very hard when you don't have kind of like a martial arts skill that you can kind of show to the world, like, this is ours and this is so cool. There's one actor that's starting to do it. He's called Vidyut Jamwal, and he's quite good because he's using a South Indian martial arts in his movies, and it's quite cool to kind of see how he does that. Aamir Khan, he's not great at action. Although he has done quite a few action movies after this, he did Ghulam, which is much better in terms of action. It's kind of a remake of On the Waterfront, the Ilya Kazan movie. Then he did Gajani, which is an adaptation of Memento. And it's so good. Gajani is so good. then he did Doom 3, which is kind of like Batman, The Dark Knight, mixed with The Prestige. And then he did Mela, which was a huge flop, which has kind of shades of Seven Samurai in it. So he has done action movies, but I don't think he's completely... it's not a genre that he's very comfortable in. And I think a lot of the impactful scenes were done through either editing. There's one shot where he flips a guy in a jail scene, which I found was a very effective flip, like just like a shoulder toss. But again, it was the way it was cut. And, you know, the stuntmen are really selling that this is actually hurting. And the one I really, really like, and the one reason I revisit Bazi is that jailhouse brawl, which I really love. And it's, I feel also for a Bollywood movie, this is shot quite nicely. This was very much influenced by, I think he's the cinematographer is a South Indian cinematographer called Teja. And the way it is lit, it's a very South Indian way of framing the characters and the light, the way it kind of, I don't know what the technical term is. Is it called, is the one J.J. Abrams uses a lot? What's it called?
I'm not sure I know what you're driving at here.
In Star Trek, everybody was constantly talking about his... I'll think of it like 10 minutes later.
Well, is it Lens Flare? Because, I mean, that's J.J. He loves Lens Flare.
yeah. That's what I meant. Yeah, so it's kind of been a Lens Flare kind of like backlighting to it, which was very different how a movie looked at that time. So I think those kind of things sell it. And there's a few standout scenes. But, you know, I mean, a lot of it is influenced by Die Hard. And Aamir Khan's shirt is tucked in the whole time, which is such a weird thing to do, you know. Like...
Well, it just on the action. I mean, I have not watched, only watched a small handful of Indian action films, and mostly I've watched ones that have come out probably in the last sort of 5 years. It was interesting to see this one because the fight choreography and the action scenes. A lot of them seem to be, I mean, I enjoyed them, but they did seem to be like behind the curve in terms of what you would get in, say, Hollywood movies of, you know, from the mid 90s. Am I right in thinking that sort of Indian sort of fight choreography and stunts was sort of behind the curve and that they now seem to have caught up? Or, you know, do I just need to watch more films and see actually there are people doing great work that was pushing the envelope 25 years ago?
I think not the problem, but an aspect of Indian cinema is that everything is rooted in emotion and not necessarily action. So even the action scenes, they're more about conveying an emotion than about the badassness of how the action looks. I think there are actors that have kind of come up that had a bit more of a kind of a martial arts background, especially like even in the late 90s when Aamir Khan was making these movies, you have an actor called Akshay Kumar, who you've got tons of movies of him on Netflix too. And he really was like a third level black belt kickboxer. So he has a few movies that it was really showcasing his action skills from the 90s. But that, you know, 90s action, it was very like, let's say like best of the best or something like that. Very kind of like kick heavy taekwondo based. We had a phase of very Matrix heavy wire work that we had in the 2000s, which I think everybody has. I mean, you know, you have Romeo Must Die and all of these Charlie's Angel movies that came out. And now I think we had a period of very much like onk back phase where there were movies that were just ripping off all of the action sequences from Ong Bak. Now I think we found a little bit of a balance because we have those people that have a martial arts background. We have, I think the cinema has the budget to get teams from Hollywood now. They have teams from China coming in. I think also because there's a lot of pressure on Hollywood teams in terms of budget, they're also looking for different avenues to kind of, you know, get a different income or get a different experience. And I think that's happening. What I would love now in Bollywood to happen is that kind of John Wick style of action to come to Bollywood. Mm. And that's not happened yet. So that is something that I'm hoping for. And I think I've seen some kind of touches of it, but we're not there yet. I do, in that way, I do think we're still a bit behind because I think now action is that kind of John Wick, Atomic Blonde kind of action. And it's not even necessarily the Fast and the Furious action, you know? Mm. The curve is there. So I think until somebody again pushes it and does something completely new, Bollywood still needs to do that John Wick kind of action. Mm.
One thing I noticed was this film seemed to be a sort of lot bloodier than, a bit more graphic than some of the other masala or action movies that I've seen. Is that typical or unusual? Or as I say, do I just need to watch more films and...
I think with Aamir Khan, he was kind of the first actor that wanted to work with a bound script, which was a big thing in Bollywood. And he also wanted to only do one movie a year. So again, that's kind of illustrating that he was kind of ahead of the curve and ahead of what the rest of the contemporaries are doing, which is now standard practice in Bollywood. Back in the day, you would just narrate the story to your actors. You would come on set and a writer would write the dialogues or the action sequences at that time and they would just get it done. Aamir Khan was kind of a bit more meticulous on how he wanted to do things. So I think his movies have been looking for a bit more realism. And I think that's why you might find not only that there's maybe more gore and blood, but it feels a bit more impactful. For example, at that same time, Shah Rukh Khan was also making some movies and they were quite bloody and gory, but it came from a very emotional aspect. Whereas Baazi, I think it is rooted within the action sequences, especially like even the first action sequence that happens at that bus stand, which I think is a quite good action sequence. It shows how competent this guy Amar Damji is as a, like, he has the brain to avoid a fight, but when he needs to get into fight, he can get it done quite quickly and quite smartly. And I also like that they showed that Amir is a smaller guy than a lot of his opponents. And sometimes they show that, you know, how he uses his size as a benefit. And I thought those kind of, there was some thinking in how to do it, but I don't think they were entirely successful in what they wanted to do.
Yes, because we see at different points of the film, we see him beating people up, you know, he's shooting at people, but he's also at different points in the film, he's using his brain to infiltrate the sort of the criminal gang and get deeper into the conspiracy that he's trying to get to the bottom of it. And so we see him in disguise at one point. He dresses up as somebody who's meant to be some sort of street devil, I think they're sort of described in the film. And then later on, in one of the strangest moments of the film, he disguises himself as a female nightclub singer who, in an attempt to sort of blackmail the villain, he pretends he's got some dirt on him and says, "Oh, yeah, you've got to come down to the club and meet me." But obviously that then allows... that allows Aamir Khan to perform an entire musical number whilst dressed up in drag. What on earth was that scene about?
Honestly, I was fearing that we're going to be talking about the sequence because you were going to ask me to explain it and I would have nothing for you. I don't understand. Like, the entirety of this song, I was just writing in my notes, why, Aamir? Why? Like, I understand that if you would hide it or there would be some way to kind of, you know, like, I don't know, like, but they go for a full sequence of song. And the other thing is, it's not only the song, he's actually seducing his colleagues that he works with all the time. Like, how can they not see that he's the guy? Like, they go in like full hog in this, in sequence, like, everybody just forgets that this is not a man in dress with like huge shoulders. He doesn't even look like a woman. There's no way like a whole audience of concert goers can think that this is a woman. But I mean, I don't know. I don't understand this part, man. Sorry. I apologize. I cannot explain this to you. It's a terrible idea. And it's a black spot on Indian cinema. I would say it's really bad.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I was just interested because I thought, oh, you know, maybe it's something his fans have always wanted to see him, you know, do this, or maybe there's some contextual reason that I might be overlooking as to why this scene exists. So clearly not, though.
The other part is also the absurdity that he has his girlfriend, Mamta Kulkarni, who's known for doing like sexy dance songs. She's a good dancer. Why didn't he just ask his reporter girlfriend to do the seduction scene? Like, why did he just say, you know, like, I need to dress up? It makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
Like, he clearly doesn't trust her at all, because there's also a sequence where he's shot in the shoulder and he decides to take out the bullet himself instead of asking his girlfriend to take out the bullet, which, again, I was like, why are you doing this? Why are the choices being made?
Well, their relationship, the relationship between this journalist character that is thrown together with Aamir Khan, their relationship is I was struggling to really kind of get fathom what was going on in their relationship, because Aamir Khan quite a lot of the time was acting like a dick, I think towards her. So, you know, there's this idea he doesn't want this journalist thrown on her. So some of the early scenes work quite well, because he plays a prank on her and he pretends that this other guy is actually him and deceives the journalist. So she conducts a whole interview with, you know, somebody who's just this minor irrelevant character. And so she then gets into trouble, and, you know, she then finds a way of getting sort of one of the police commissioner to foist herself on him and, you know, give him a sort of exclusive. And so those elements work quite well. But then later in the movie, he's faking a murder in order to get her off it, you know, get her out of his hair. And there's a sort of musical number where he just leaves, you know, he just leaves her in the middle of nowhere with some random women whilst he drives off in the vehicle. And I was just like, you know, that's a real douche move, man. Like, I was slightly sort of confused as to, you know, quite why she would be sort of, you know, quite so attracted to him, because he's behaving like a bit of a knob.
I had trouble with the kind of romantic relationship. I think one of the things is that Mamta Kulkarni is not a talented actress, just generally. She was kind of known as this, I would say, kind of like a sex pot, although I don't like using that term, but that was kind of her image. Like, she got famous by being one of the first actresses to do kind of it was called a topless magazine cover. It clearly wasn't topless, but she had her arms crossed. But it was a huge scandal, like, in India and Pakistan. Like, it was the kind of magazine cover that, you know, kids would steal, and then it would get passed through from one dorm room to the other dorm room, and you got it back in, like, the terrible state ever. But that's kind of like what she was known for. And even her career, she's not really had any talented roles or anything like that. She's not really had a legacy. She was mostly known for this kind of like, yeah, sexy seductress role. And I think even in this movie, that's the kind of category they've slotted her in. You know, there's a lot of like chest humping and like, you know, like a lot of like gyrating of the hips when Aamir is like tied up and things like that, which is like, yeah, like, I mean, for the people that don't know, and I think the songs for a lot of new watchers of Bollywood can be what they don't like, or they kind of feel uncomfortable with the songs. The thing is, again, the song always conveys an emotion. And I think a lot of the songs were just basically about a surrogate for them having, I'm trying to keep it clean, but like a romantic interaction, let's say it that way.
We can say sex. I know we like to keep it clean on this podcast, but we can say that. But, or, you know,
I was going to say banging. They were basically banging.
Maybe stick with romantic interaction. But,
okay.
But yeah, Mamta Kulkarni is somebody who, as you say, didn't seem to have a particularly strong career, and drifted out of movies in the kind of early noughties. There was one detail there I was quite interested to pick your brain on. It sort of said that her, in something I was reading, it said that her last movie was a Bangladeshi film. And I just wondered, is that the sort of, you know, South Asian equivalent of doing a made for TV movie? Like, you know, you've hit bottom if you're making a Bangladeshi movie. Is that, I don't know. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, like, a lot of people equate Indian cinema, Bollywood, with all of Indian cinema. And Indian cinema has a lot of different regions. And every region has kind of a different flavor to the way they make their movies. So Bollywood is, you know, the grand Hollywood of it, you know, like the bigger budgets, the colorful, the foreign locations. Malayali cinema is a bit more cerebral, smaller. Telugu cinema is very loud. And there is also a hierarchy in terms of, you know, which is kind of more prestige and which is kind of rock bottom. And I would say Bangladeshi cinema is kind of on the lower end of the totem pole. I don't want to offend anybody. But again, I'm a very kind of like Bollywood watcher. So there's a clear bias in the way I talk about these things. So, but yes, that's exactly what it means. When you cannot get any decent roles in Bollywood, you start scoping out regional cinema. And sometimes you end up being quite successful in those regional cinema. That's happened quite a few times. That was not the case for Mamta Kulkarni because she does not have that much talent, unfortunately, as an actress.
And I think it's probably worth saying that she's left the world of acting, but she seemed to sort of disappear, it seems, for a sort of a good 10 years. But she does seem to have popped back up in the news agenda recently. And I think you were as surprised as I was to find out the details of that.
I always love how intrigued you were about it when you found out. you were on DM talking about it. That was funny. And honestly, I didn't know she was like, she's completely dropped off my radar. So I didn't even know. But it is true that in the late 90s, there was a kind of how do you say? There's a bit of a back and forth between the underground mafia and the criminal elements and Hindi cinema, where a lot of these criminals were whitewashing their illegal funds through Bollywood channels. And even a few large-scale producers were then put into jail because of doing that. Because they were always looking for financing. These gangsters had money, so it was kind of a good way to launder their money. That was happening, so there was kind of a connection between actors or actresses getting close with these mafia dons, and then these mafia dons putting pressure on producers to cast these actors. So a lot of that happened. It's not there anymore as much as now it's all about corporate money more than anything. But that was definitely something that was happening in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I think that's exactly when Mamta Kulkarni had a little bit of fame that she had. So I understand that she kind of fell into that trap of drugs, underworld. And I think she's married to a gangster or something like
Well,
that.
Yes. I mean, that's what I was reading, was that she is married to a man who's basically said to be sort of one of the kingpins of the drug trade in India. He was holed up in Nairobi and basically controlling the drugs trade from there, and has in the last, I think, year or so been extradited to the United States on drugs charges. So Bamta Kulkarni fell in with this guy and has married him, and I think at the moment she's trying to seek some sort of legal clean bill of health to sort of say that she had no knowledge of this guy's activities, and she had no part in it. But that's to be resolved as to whether she gets to get that sort of legal clean bill of health. But I was just expecting to maybe she did a few more films, drifted into television or something. I wasn't expecting her to basically be a drug lord's wife. But there you go.
I think it's also, we need to slightly highlight, there's always the idea of, gender dynamics in any kind of patriarchal society. But I think it's tough for a woman like Mamta Kulkarni at that time, because the only card she had to play, she was like a total outsider. And Bollywood can be very nepotistic, that because people know a famous actor's son will get launched and they will get a career. But when you're a total outsider, it's very hard to break through in Bollywood, and you kind of need like that, a trump card. And because respectable popular actresses would never take the kind of roles that Mamta Kulkarni took, it kind of, that was the only hand she had to play. But then the problem is also then the shaming that comes with it. and she has no support network in a way. So when this, all of this happens, nobody in Bollywood raised their voices. Nobody kind of helped her out. Nobody wrote a petition or anything like that. She's been just totally forgotten and put on the side, which is kind of a sad thing. So that, I just wanted to kind of highlight that it's tough for women, you know, in general, and especially for at that age, at like late 90s, it was kind of very tough. And this has happened with a few other women in Hindi cinema too.
Well, you touch on an issue which I've found quite interesting, because I've heard you talk about it before on your own podcast, which is this sort of nepotism within Indian cinema, and the fact that pretty much any film you're watching, the main actors in it will probably be somebody's son or nephew from somebody from a previous generation. And you know, I think I'm right in thinking in this film that Aamir Khan is actually the nephew of somebody who is credited with actually creating the masala genre back in the 70s with Salman Khan's father, who obviously is now a big star sort of now. And I just wondered if you could, I mean, you know, we used to in Hollywood, you know, you have, you know, lots of actors who are, you know, related to, I mean, just look at the Barrymore family with, you know, Drew Barrymore now goes all the way back to, you know, the origins of, you know, Hollywood in the, you know, the 1910s and 20s. Is it worse in Indian cinema?
I think one of the problems is that in Hindi cinema is that the size comes into in mind. Like, Hollywood is huge. And plus, it's kind of a corporate structure. It's spread out into television. It's spread out into video games now and all of these other different mediums that you have. Whereas in Bollywood, back in the day, it was basically like seven families that were doing all of the movies, and they were making 500 movies or something like that. And then those, like the prestige movies in a way, right? And then underneath, you had kind of the B-grade movie that would really play in local regions, which nobody aspired to be a B-grade actor. Where I even think the difference is smaller in a way in Hollywood. You know, like, where do you categorize somebody like Seth Rogen? You know, he's not necessarily an A-list star, but he has a really good career and he can kind of, you know, make the projects he wants. Whereas because Bollywood is much smaller, that kind of different levels don't really exist. So it becomes much harder. So you need to find like a cachet or kind of a thing to, you need like a star launch. It's a big thing. It used to be a big thing that, oh, this actor that you've loved for 30 years, now his son is going to be an actor. And the actor would really prepare. They would do horse riding and martial arts and dancing and acting. Oh, acting not always, but all the rest they used to do. They have a six-pack and like glistening pecs and all that kind of thing. And that would be like a huge event. That would be event cinema. People would go and support this kind of guy. The problem was, or in a way, it's the level playing field is that if you are not talented, you will not have a sustained career. You will, and if you compare that to, you know, Scott Eastwood is making movies, you know, like, why is Scott Eastwood making movies? He has no talent, right? Where in Bollywood, you get maybe a chance or two chances and then you get forgotten. So a lot of people have tried to launch their sons or their daughters, but it's not really worked out because a lot of them did not have talent. Salman Khan, Shah Rukh Khan did have talent. Another one, I don't know, did you guys review War already, or is that something
that's still to be done, War?
Yeah, so Hrithik Roshan and Tiger Shroff, both of the actors in those movies, are from an actor's background or a producer's background, and they are massive stars because they are talented. So it can kind of go both ways. Also, it's hard to, now it's become an issue in the last 5 years, I would say nepotism has become a big issue, or a big issue of debate. But 7-8 years ago, everybody was fully on board with nepotism. They were like, give me more nepotism. And now they don't want to anymore. So it's become hard for even the industry to adapt. Like, wait, you don't like us anymore? So every new star has to talk about their privilege and how lucky they are and this and that. So it becomes like a more of a journalistic talking point than anything else. But yeah, it is still there. But I think it's nepotism is a problem everywhere, right? A doctor's son becomes a doctor, you know, a lawyer's son becomes a lawyer, you know. Look at Succession, you know. Look at the Fox Media empire, you know. It's all nepotism.
Oh yeah, politics, journalism, it's all rife with exactly the same sort of nepotism. But you know, let's turn now to sort of one of the other big elements of this movie, which are the musical numbers, and we sort of touched on a few of them in sort of earlier answers and sort of bits of what we've been discussing. You know, we've got one of the sort of era's, you know, top composers working on this film. I mean, you know, how were the songs for you?
I really liked revisiting the song, most of the songs, and I'll be honest, like, even if the movie wasn't a big hit, the songs were quite popular. I remember the songs. And I'll also say that we're talking about Anu Malik. Anu Malik is also a guy that's had a lot of like sexual harassment cases around him. So I think that's important to highlight. Although he was very successful, he abused that power. And it's kind of a good counterpoint with Bazi as a movie, because we're saying, you know, Bazi has plagiarized a lot of movies. I would say 75% of Anu Malik's career was plagiarism. He was one of the biggest plagiarizers that there was. He would just steal anything that he could. Like, even if you just go to YouTube, just type in Anu Malik plagiarism, and they'll just put the original song next to his song, and your mind will be blown. And here he rips off Mozart, right? So imagine, like, he had the audacity to do that. But yeah, it's true. He has a great career. He's done good work. He's done quite a few good songs that I enjoy, I like. But I think his era came to an end in the 90s. And I think him himself, now he's like a judge on reality TV shows, or he got kicked off after those sexual assault as allegations. But he's kind of on the sidelines. But talking about nepotism, one of the leading two composers at the moment in Bollywood are his nephews. So, which is, again, surprise. Bollywood, this is what Bollywood does.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be looking at the exploding helicopter action.
He brings the popcorn. She brings the roses. Subject Cinema, a tasty new film topic each week with a side order of film reviews.
Yum.
T.C. Kirkham.
Ba-dum-ching.
Kim Brown.
What?
Over 500,000 listeners, and you could be the next one. SubjectCinema.com.
Real movies for real people.
We're back, and now we're looking at the exploding helicopter action. This happens at the very end of the film. Chow Bei is trying to make his getaway from the roof of the tower block in a helicopter. With the helicopter about to take off, Amir has to improvise. He grabs a nearby fire hose and throws it into the chopper's spinning rotor blades. This jams up the rotors and causes some sort of engine malfunction that results in the helicopter blowing up. Arsene, what did you make of the exploding helicopter action?
I have to say two things. I did not remember that there was an exploding helicopter in this movie, so I was surprised when this happened. And B, calling this a helicopter is being very, very gracious, because it's basically a photo booth with a ceiling fan on top of it.
You're absolutely right. It is possibly one of the most unrealistic looking helicopters I've ever seen. I mean, it looks like it's been made by school children.
Exactly. Like not even like high school children. We're talking about nursery kids here. It's really bad. And it was also funny because, again, the last sequence of this movie is, you know, Die Hard, which, you know, Die Hard is like a 2-hour movie. They fit in all of Die Hard in 20 minutes. So again, audacity. But like, also the thing is, like, Nakatomi Plaza is like an impressive size building. And the building they're in is like basically 6 floors. So I don't even know how they got a helicopter up there. But yeah, it was not a good scene. I felt the high in terms of action was really that jailhouse brawl, which the one I really love, and maybe the first action sequence in the bus. But I felt it was kind of a disappointing exploding helicopter. I think you, when you have the words exploding helicopter, you kind of feel like a crescendo, a climax of all of this that has happened. And I think this guy killed his mom. This guy framed him for rape. This guy, you know, is a corrupt guy that is like ripping off billions from the government, which Amar Damji loves the government and he loves his country. He makes it clear on different and numerous points throughout the movie with long speeches. I think it might have been better with a bit more of a gruesome kind of death. I thought it was kind of a bit of a cop-out, the exploding helicopter. What did you think?
I completely agree with you about what on earth was that they were actually exploding. I mean, it's a photo booth with a, you know, a kind of ceiling fan on the top. I think it's a perfect description for what on earth has been cobbled together by the props department to blow up. And I think it's the most unrealistic helicopter I've seen be blown up since I watched Who Killed Captain Alex, the Wakaliwood movie. But I did think, though, even if the actual vehicle looked completely unrealistic, I did think the explosion itself was very good. That was, yeah, you know, there was a big fireball there, you know, it's, you know, whatever they're burning there, whatever oil or pyrotechnics, it's, you know, they certainly don't shortchange you. So, you know, you get a big fireball behind it. And, you know, they then do use the wreckage as a backdrop for the final confrontation between, you know, Chalbi and Amir Khan. So, you know, I think it plays its role. I do think, as you say, Chalbi's final death, where he's electrocuted on a satellite dish, it did feel a little bit underwhelming, especially as I thought the shortened version of Die Hard that we get in the final 20 minutes is actually quite intense, as you know, Amir's working his way through the corridors. You know, I actually felt that was, in terms of the action in the film, I actually thought that was actually sort of well shot, and there was a much higher level of intensity in the action there. And then, yeah, that kind of final that final sort of death is I mean, and also Chalbi in the bits that sort of leads up to this, I mean, he really goes off the deep end in terms of he's just shooting people dead instantly. He throws a woman out of a window. I mean, he's really like going full villain. So he's sort of like, the stakes are really being upped. And then, yeah, we get a slightly unrealistic helicopter explosion. And then we get, Chalbi being kind of, stir fried on a satellite dish.
I think basically Chalbi at that point just puts all of his chips in a helicopter escape. And he was like, I'm going to burn every bridge that I have. Like, this is the only way I can get out of it. And I need diamonds, apparently. But by the way, can you get electrocuted by falling on a satellite dish? I don't think so.
They're not going to be. Yeah, there's not going But I guess they just, you know, they needed to end the film. And I guess that, for whatever reason, they decided that was the way to do it. But I mean, given how much else they were ripping off of Die Hard, I don't know why they just didn't have him fall off the, you know, the top of the building like Alan Rickman in the original.
Because the building wasn't tall enough, man. That's why they couldn't. He would just break an ankle, sprain an ankle. That's how short. The building is too small.
Okay, well, I think that just about wraps things up for this show. Azim, thank you so much for joining me. Do you want to remind people about where they can find your podcast and where they can find you online?
Yeah, so we're on Khandan Podcast or youpodcasting.com. You can find us on pretty much any streaming platform. And I think, you know, for your audience, I would say the way we do our show, we don't push away non-Indian audiences, and we add a lot of humor. You should always think of it as, in a way, like, how did this get made, but for Bollywood? So it's the Khan aspect of it is just kind of a jumping off point. So we are very much in touch with our international audiences. So do check us out on Khandan Podcast. It's a lot of fun.
Yep, a big recommendation for myself. I've been listening in, and I would say, you know, you don't need to be Bollywood expert to get something out of the shows that you do. So yeah, definite recommendation from me. I would also like to recommend my own website, explodinghelicopter.com. Go and check that out for reviews and information on films where helicopters explode. We'll be back soon, but until then, keep watching the skies for those exploding helicopters.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.